Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz. Well, the pulse certainly quickened in Washington this week with revelations about a controversial phone call between President Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky last July. It prompted House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to announce the House would begin a formal impeachment inquiry into the president. Further fuel was thrown on the political conflagration as a whistleblower complaint was made public and the director of national intelligence testified before a House committee. All of this led to a new round of questions for Maine's congressional delegation concerning the president's actions and his future. For the details, we turn now to our Political Pulse regulars, Chief Political Correspondent Mal Leary and State House Bureau Chief Steve Missler. Mal, want to kick us off?
Well, where do we start with this, Erwin? Because it is so many questions that have suddenly come down. Mm-hmm. First, we had the president releasing the transcript of the phone call. Now, we have to be careful here because we easily slip into this transcript. Well, it's not really a verbatim transcript like you would get in a court action or something. It is the summary that's put together by national security staff. It's close to verbatim is what we're told by the folks who do this on a regular basis, but it's really not absolutely verbatim.
It shows how far we've come since Richard Nixon and the tapes.
And that's another question that has been raised and not answered is whether there were tapes made of this conversation. And that's one of the many questions that is being raised by the two intelligence committees. The House Intelligence Committee met in open meeting with the acting director of the National Intelligence Agencies. He answered a lot of questions, but a lot of questions he did not answer, citing national security reasons. We don't know what went on in the Senate Intelligence Committee, which was a closed meeting, where he could be more frank about some national security items he couldn't talk about in open session in the House. So we have this array of things going on in D.C. that is sucking the political wind out of everything else as Congress grapples with this whole question of an impeachment inquiry while they still have their regular work to do.
How is the congressional delegation responding to all of this, if they are?
You can sort of take this on a scale of political jeopardy for each member. So let's go to the first district where Shelley Pingree, a Democrat, has been, you know, pretty vocal and will take pretty much any opportunity to criticize the president and his conduct. And she does that from a very safe place. This, you know, the first district is a very overwhelmingly Democratic district. So when she talks about the president and his misconduct or his alleged misconduct, she's really speaking for her constituents or the majority of them in that district. To a lesser extent, I think that's the same for Senator Angus King, the independent. Even though he is elected statewide, he just was reelected. He faces a little bit less, I think, jeopardy in being critical of the president, although he's in a different position because as a senator, he would be voting on whether or not to remove the president, potentially, if this inquiry continues to move forward. Now, it's a completely different story for Republican Senator Susan Collins, who was already engaged in a reelection bid that could be very difficult if she decides to run. And of course, Second District Congressman Jared Golden, a Democrat, who represents a district that voted for Donald Trump in 2016. Those two are being very cautious, some might argue elusive, and commenting on some of these matters. I mean, Senator Collins has basically taken the position that she's a potential juror in the impeachment process, and therefore she's not going to comment or make any declarative statements about what's going on or in this steady stream of explosive allegations that seem to come at every hour. She's taken that position. Jared Golden has indicated that these allegations should be investigated, but he also is being very ginger and about making any declarations about the conduct itself. Politically, a smart move for both of them to do that, but they're under extreme pressure from both sides to either take a side, even though we don't have all of the facts quite yet.
It's really interesting to note that Angus King took the same position as Collins for months. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many clips I could pull up of him saying, well, I really can't comment about impeachment. That's in the House, and I'll have to be a juror if they do impeach. But this week, he decided that the allegations were so serious that he was going to weigh in and support impeachment, even though he may be put in that position of being a juror. In my mind, the one member of the delegation that made a major shift in their position this week was Senator King.
What did the president say? What did he promise? What did he agree to? That's what we need to know. Therefore, I think the speaker's opening of an inquiry in the House is an important step. It's not a final step, it's not impeachment, but it's getting to the facts and providing a forum for a serious bipartisan investigation.
Senator Collins did finally have something to say, though, after President Trump on Thursday talked to a group at the United Nations mission in New York. And among the things he said was that whoever supplied the whistleblower with information was perhaps a spy and should be treated the way we treated traitors. And Steve, Collins did respond to that.
A reasonable person could infer from the president's comments that he's basically saying that the whistleblower or whoever's providing the information to the whistleblower should be executed. He talked about how that's what we did with traitors in the old days. I mean, that's what he said. And there's video and audio of these comments now that are all over the place. Senator Collins basically just said that she disagreed with that assessment, that whistleblowers provide a great check on misconduct. But she stopped well short of condemning what the president said, just only that she took issue with how he characterized whistleblowers. She described it as a mischaracterization. She really focused on that. She really wouldn't have much to say about the closed-door session that her and King attended with the intelligence agency director, Joseph McGuire. She didn't talk about that, although there was an open session with McGuire. And of course, the whistleblower complaint was made public. But she did not comment on any of those things except to say there was a lot of controversy during the House Intelligence Committee meeting about whether or not the intelligence director slow walked bringing this whistleblower complaint to Congress. And there was some dispute of whether he was, you know, legally required to do so. She believes that he did the right thing and also that an inquiry is legal. That's not really a risky position to take, frankly, but that's what she has said so far. And that's a little bit more than what she has said leading up to then.
Is there anything that you think might move either Golden or Collins to take a more definitive stand on any of this?
Collins, I think her situation is different from Golden in this way. She's potentially running for statewide office. Her brand is attached to the idea that she's been able to win support from people who might be very, very upset with what the president is doing or is alleged to have done right now. I'm not sure what will move Senator Collins to make a more definitive stance. I mean, one thing to keep an eye on is the polling around this. Mm-hmm. The NPR, PBS NewsHour released a poll yesterday, although the timing of it was a little tricky because the poll was conducted the day of the telephone reconstruction, if you will, but before the whistleblower complaint became public. But it did show something that was very interesting, at least to me. The nation is divided on whether or not the impeachment inquiry is the right way to go. But there was some significant movement from a similar survey by the same polling organization and commissioned by the same news organizations that were taken in April, where it really showed that Democrats could face electoral jeopardy in 2020 because there were so many people that just don't think impeachment is the right way to go. I think if there is additional polling that shows that there's a trend towards an impeachment inquiry among the American public, that might give Senator Collins more license to make a more definitive stance. And the same applies to Jared Golden.
We're going to be cautious here. We're very early in this process. We're going to have hearings that the speaker has talked about, Speaker Pelosi. You know, they're going to try to bring in the whistleblower. We don't know who this person is yet. They probably will be in closed session. But what they say in those sessions about what they heard and what other officials heard in these conversations and this whole process of somehow trying to cover up the fact that the call ever existed by using a different place to store it, all of these things are going to be swirling out there. You know, some of us who are old enough to remember the Richard Nixon impeachment times, this stuff started coming out over a period of months, and more and more came out. And you went from Richard Nixon, who won a landslide victory in 1972, to being reviled by the voters in the polls. Just, he's a crook, he's got to go. we could see the same sort of stuff develop over the next several months. That's why I'm saying let's be cautious here until we start seeing more information about what was said, what was done. Was it an attempt to cover up?
And that is what I think Democrats are hoping to gain from an actual inquiry. And if you recall, Mal could speak to this better than I can, but I have, you know, certainly read that the Nixon impeachment inquiry was not a popular endeavor when it first started, but it gained momentum over time as there were hearings held, more information came out, and that's when public opinion changed dramatically.
And this goes to a comment that Senator Bill Cohen, Defense Secretary Bill Cohen, and when I talked to him about this, it was Congressman Bill Cohen on the Judiciary Committee who voted for impeachment. And he turned to me when we just finished an interview and he said, you know, Mal, this could cost me my job, but it's the right thing to do.
And I'm pretty sure Senator Collins was a staffer for Bill Cohen at that time.
Yes.
All right. Well, there was also some news from next year's Senate race. There's a new candidate in the race and a new source of money for Republican Senator Susan Collins' opponents. Mal?
The new candidate's John Tracy. He's a retired major general in the Air Force. He believes that two huge issues that have to be addressed are climate change and health care costs. It's interesting to hear him talk about those as the top issues when the guy has this incredible national security background, having served in several commands. He was, for example, the commander of the fighter wing that launched fighters the day of 9/11. I mean, this guy's got a wealth of experience, but he doesn't talk about that. He talks about these other issues. I think the big problem that he's going to have is whether he can raise the resources to be involved in the campaign. We know that Speaker Sarah Gideon has over $1 million that she raised. Betsy Sweet's been raising money, nowhere near in that category. So it's going to be, I think, a real battleground in the Senate race on the Democratic side. And to circle back to our discussion of Senator Collins, I mean, the other thing that's got to be in the back of her mind is how far she goes is going to trigger a Trump candidate to try to knock her off. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of precedent for that. You go back to the days of Joe McCarthy. He found a candidate to run against Margaret Chase Smith in the primary to try to defeat her because of her criticism of him. It failed miserably, by the way, but the precedent is certainly there.
And then, Steve, also, Elizabeth Warren has injected herself into this race.
Her campaign manager made an announcement that her campaign is actually going to devote resources to the race to defeat Susan Collins. Now, this is interesting because I think it may end up benefiting Elizabeth Warren a little bit more than it ends up hurting Susan Collins. The profile of the Collins race, if it actually occurs, is huge. I mean, national Democrats and activists are really engaged in this. They really want to see Senator Collins go. And Elizabeth Warren is sort of playing to that by basically telling activists on the ground in Maine, look, we're sending reinforcements to help you. And I think that that actually helps her in her own bid to win a Maine primary, for example. And it certainly helps her with national Democrats because she's taking on a priority for all of them, which is to defeat Susan Collins. So I think that helps her. It's better than, say, coming here and just holding a rally, which is what Pete Buttigieg did back in August. It resonates more with activists on the ground here. And I think that's its value to her. Whether or not it impacts Collins negatively in any particular way, I think it depends on the level of investment and whether or not there are actually volunteers and people knocking on doors and that sort of thing. It'll be interesting to see if other candidates at the top tier of the Democratic primary field make similar pledges because, you know, that too could endear them with activists on the ground.
Irwin, this goes to the incredible national attention on the Senate race. Because we were just talking about what Elizabeth Warren may be putting in for a little bit of extra help. But we've got a whole bunch of dark money and open super PACs, both sides, that are coming in for and against her. The battle is already engaged, and there's already huge amounts of resources coming into the state.
That's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. We're back on our regular schedule now, so you can download new versions of The Pulse each Friday afternoon at 3. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Irwin Gratz.